those wonderful pre-war communities that we admire and exist, if you look at the books upon which they were based, you can't tell that they were written by specialists. If you look, for example, at Raymond Unwin's book, Town Planning and Practice, you can't tell he was an architect. If you read John Nolan's books, you can't tell he's a landscape architect. If you read Harlan Bartholomew's books, you can't tell he was a traffic engineer, because they had everything comprehensively in mind. It is only in the post-war period that specialization took over. And specialization has been the undermining of urbanism. Urbanism hates specialization. It hates simplification. It's all about complexity. It's all about connectedness. Now, if I were to describe what the fundamentals of conventional suburban design and new urbanism is, it is not whether it's built on greenfield or not, because everything was built on greenfield at one point. It's not whether it's dense or not. I mean, there are small towns and villages that are not very dense at all, that work perfectly. What it always has in common, the difference is the lack of integration of conventional suburban design, CSD, the lack of integration. The environmentalists take care of their part first. Don't build here. Don't cross this. Don't build. Stay away. The traffic engineers of the Metropolitan Transport Organizations lay out the thoroughfares just where they're necessary, with big old right-of-ways, big old reservations. They go first. They try to stay clear of wetlands, but they put their thoroughfares through in constant section. There's a constant section as they go through. Then the planners come in and say, and essentially cut up the land that's left over. And they cut up the land in increments which are acceptable to the developers. You know, when they make a retail center, it's 120 acres, because that's what a shopping mall is. You know, when they say high density residential, which is essentially in the suburbs rental apartments, they set off about 20 acres because they know that 800 units are the ideal for a leasing office. You know, the janitor can take care of 800 units. Anything less than 800 units is less efficient. You know, subdivisions tend to be also about 120 acres because you can fit a certain number of cul-de-sacs. It's worth getting the permit when the subdivision is 120 acres. So basically the planners cut up the land in a highly specialized way. So what you get is a sequence of people working as specialists. There are developers who say, I only do residential. Don't talk to me about retail. I only do offices. I only do business parks. In all this, the traffic engineer has been complicit by counting traffic. And because traffic is the first problem that the NIMBYs encounter, you know, when people are against growth, there are a lot of things wrong with their communities, you know, from the schools to the consumption of open space to the environmental impact. But what brings them out to fight you is the traffic congestion. Okay? And therefore, the engineer comes up and makes an analysis of what the traffic impact is or would be with this or that project. And on that basis, that becomes the decision tree. That becomes the valve. Does it go ahead or not? So the entire armature of whether a project is good or not has been reduced to counting cars. Now, in the end, because the market more or less operates, out there in the suburbs are the correct numbers of everything. Out there, there are shops that approximately correspond, at least until the very recent ridiculousness, absurdity, there have been the approximate number of houses at different price points, the approximate number of rental units, the approximately balanced number of offices, and the retail at the different price points. The market does operate at that level, but it has never been integrated. We have all the ingredients for making towns and cities. We've been laying them out at a tremendous rate for 50 years, and we've never integrated them. The ingredients are sitting out there side by side, capable of making cities. Someone calculated that Florida lays out 14 new towns a year, the equivalent of 14 new towns a year, but they're never assembled into new towns. And that's for lack of integration, i.e., the specialization. So the most important thing about a meeting like this and about the CNU is that you should not be specialized. And I think that at least the engineers I know that I work with are not only fully conversant with all the other trades that create cities, but they themselves become experts. Like, for example, I know Peter Swift can now design buildings. And I say, Peter, I'm not paying you to do that. Back, calculate the traffic, please. And there are landscape architects that can do anything, absolutely anything. They can do buildings, they can design roads and so forth. And that's to the good. I meant that as a joke. I love it. Peter's a good building designer, by the way. But the idea is that you become conversant with everything else. You have to really know how everything integrates. There's nothing unusual about that. All the pre-war books were like that. No one drew a picture. Raymond Unwin, when he drew a picture of a thoroughfare, it was the pavement where the vehicle was, and also the sidewalk, and the hedge, and the setback, and the building, and by the way, the terminated vista. There was also a notion of when the deflection would take place, how far the deflection should be, or the termination, the visual termination at the end, which, by the way, we're beginning to learn now, is an integral part of traffic calming. You know, just by way of just a little parenthesis, there's something called the new traffic engineer. The old traffic engineering had the new new urbanism is what I call it. The old new urbanism had the buildings disciplined spatially. You know, the buildings basically we achieved a certain alignment and spatial definition. And there was a generation that actually Wunderf based that wiggled the ground plane. And you got these absolutely fantastic, you know, almost rural, in two dimensions, rural sections, and that would slow you down. Because you would. Now, bear in mind one thing. You didn't actually bounce off those curbs, right? You didn't hit the curb, right? And then bounce off and hit the other curb and bounce off. That's not what slowed you up. It was visual. You knew that it was doing that, right? Well, if it works on two planes, why not do it on three planes? Why not also have the buildings actually deflect and go around? It's fantastically effective and beautiful to boot. If you look at the latest models of new urbanist communities, you will see that they're becoming progressively more medieval. You know, there are fewer of those straight streets. Because, you know, eventually, by the way, drivers get pretty good at, you know, getting past the Wunderfs and the stuff in two dimensions. It's only when you actually begin redesigning the entire thing thoroughly, you know, the space, not just in the ground plane, but on the third dimension, that it begins really slowing you up. And that was in Raymond Unwin's book. That's why he also drew in the rendering, in the 3D rendering, he also drew the deflection and the terminated vista, because that slows you up. So, a small aside, but I meant to say, the first thing I wanted to say is that specialization has been the blight, the central blight that differentiates conventional suburban development from new urbanism. Now, one thing that's a little bit of a problem, and I'm going to get back to this later, that many of the engineers in this room make their living by counting in numbers. Okay, it's about metrics. Everything needs to be counted. And I need to get back to that because it takes us away from certain necessary models. You know, when you have an open network, when you have a dendritic system of cul-de-sac to local to collector to arterial, a dendritic system in which there's only one way to get it from anywhere else, you can clip the system at any time and count the cars. Right? It's relatively easy. When you have a network system, and by the way, and the engineers, godlike, decide what the number of lanes are to be because they can actually tell what the traffic and, you know, how much traffic is induced by this layout, how much traffic is generated. So they say, this has to be a four-laner, this has to be a five-laner. So in a kind of central command and control from the beginning, they designed the thoroughfare in a system that is perfectly controllable because it's dendritic. What happens when you open the network, which is today's conference? You download the decision-making to the individuals every time they hit an intersection, and every day it's different. So they come here and they say, traffic looks a little rough. This is what I do in Miami. I live in Coral Gables. I have a huge panoply of choices to get from anywhere to anywhere else. And I, you know, I say, traffic looks a little rough, or I have to pick up the laundry, and I take a left here and a right here. And you download the decisions of which way to get to your destination to individuals hundreds of times a day. It is like decentralized computing. You see? It's much more intelligent than the old mainframe system. The problem is, how are you going to figure out to change the culture that wants you to come up with a number when in fact you can't count the system? The mainframe system is not intelligent enough to accommodate those thousands and millions of individual decisions at every intersection that take place when you have a small network. So I think at some point, you really do have to rethink the profession needs to reinvent itself in its technical methodology. That was a parenthesis, sorry. Let me get back to the big topic. Okay? Oh, yes, don't worry. I have to win. 10:50. Okay. The situation, why this is important. Okay. We're in a dreadful situation. Other than the president-elect, we're in very, very sorry shape, as everybody knows. We have four overlaid, what they call the perfect storm. There are four overlaid problems, all of which are actually technically independent. The real estate bubble need not have happened at this time. It could have been earlier or later. The peak oil and what it did to the prices, and which is ruining us as we ship the America's wealth gets shipped offshore at the rate of $400 billion a year every year. Just shipped over. By the way, $400 billion, if you want to know what it buys, go to the Persian Gulf. Okay, just go to the Persian Gulf. You can't tell. When you write the check, you can't tell what it buys. It's only when the goods come in that you can tell. Go to the Persian Gulf and go see in Abu Dhabi what they're building. The tunnels, the rail, and so forth. Okay, so it is important to know that the second crisis is independent. Peak oil is independent of the bubble, and it's also independent of global warming, which obviously was identified, you know, as much as 20 years ago, clearly identified. It's only Al Gore alerted us. But it's happening all at once. It's happening all at once. Many people in their minds think that it is all related, that it's some kind of cosmic punishment for the way we've been living, including our great Jim Kunstler, who thinks we're being punished. But there is one connection, and that's our urban pattern. The lifestyle of the American middle class is front and center and ties them all together. The fact that we drive around for the most elemental things, we consume ground at a tremendous rate, and we, because of apparently the dissatisfaction of this highly isolated life, that we actually consume a huge amount by way of entertainment. You know, we keep buying stuff. All these things are related. And by the way, there are a lot that are not even in the radar screen yet, such as our schools are no good. Why is that? That's also related to the human habitat, which is related to the suburbia we've been building. So absolutely at the center of the problem, of all of our problems, is urbanism. And even people like Al Gore have not been focused. You know, Barack Obama has in his statement some notion that this is happening, but it's up to us to make it front and center. It is terribly important. If we do not do this, this nation will in fact lose its standing and decline. The great advantage that we've had as a continental nation, which is essentially the great asset of land, we could get all those immigrants to come in without running out of land. We had so much to farm. We had so much to mine. We had so much to give away. The government funded itself. And the colonization of the West was funded by a free amount, by a huge amount of this free commodity, which was land. It was the best asset we had, this country. That has become a disadvantage. So this asset that made us the great nation economically, and in many ways related to our freedom and our efficiency, because we could take so many immigrants, has now become a disadvantage. We are a most disadvantaged nation. When you go to Europe and you see the pattern of England and the pattern of Germany and the pattern of France, and even the Eastern countries, they're even tighter, Cuba can retrofit itself for the 21st century within a decade. It's all compact, transit-friendly urbanism. It is only we that, having built the last 50 years, find ourselves at a tremendous, tremendous disadvantage to all the other nations. We are now, thanks to our urban pattern, perhaps the most disadvantaged nation in this regard. You know, to meet the carbon neutral, it's harder for us and more expensive. It's all going to be much harder to do better in the 21st century because of the way we've built the 20th.